Well, we shouldn't say good morning, should we? Because the listener could be listening at any time of day or night. That's the great thing about podcasts. You're in control.
And that's something your parents just still won't and never will understand. Mm.
So good now to you.
Yeah.
Podcast generation.
Good now. Because it is all about you at the end of the day, isn't it, these days?
Putting you first.
Putting you at the centre of your you-ness.
It's self-care. Create boundaries and something.
Boundaries is a big thing. That kids
yeah, boundaries is huge.
Yeah, and handing your knife to the local police station.
Yeah. Please.
Unless it's just a sort of tomato knife or a butter knife or something. Unless you plan on using that as a weapon. Yeah. Use your judgment. Use your own judgment, really.
To double down on that, tomato knives are fine.
Mm-hmm.
Don't reach for a tomato knife.
I think I do actually have a tomato knife.
We have quite a lot, I swear by them.
I genuinely don't know what a tomato knife is.
It's a small, very sharp, serrated,
snub-nosed
blade.
Fudge. Mm. So that's to cut a tomato?
I don't to spread this about, but I use it to cut all sorts.
What?
Just tomatoes. Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's off the rails.
Yeah. I can get 5 slices out of a cherry tomato with my tomato knife.
To make the tiniest little cheese and tomato sandwich imaginable.
Yes.
For a tiny mouse.
For a tiny mouse.
Mr. Patagonia. Correct.
Yeah. Your best friend, the mouse, Mr. Patagonia. It's weird that he hasn't come up on the podcast. It's exactly the kind of thing we would normally talk about.
Because he's such a big part of Mike's life.
He's such a huge... Everyone knows this.
He's very private.
But he's Mr. Patagonia, and that's named after the shopping brand, not the area of Chile. That's right, isn't it? Yeah. So he's not interested in that part of Chile at all.
He's not interested in travel, broadly speaking.
No. But he does like the brand. Well, he likes the brand optics, doesn't he?
Yes.
Is Mr. Patagonia involved, Henry, in your new brand collab between the outdoor brand Patagonia and your religion, Pacadonia?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Well, the idea is to make the first fully breathable outdoor cassock. That's what we're aiming for, which actually has never been done.
Yeah, for all-weather religious parades.
For all weather religious parades. Mm. And also we're trying to make a little chorister's outfit.
Oh.
That has a little satchel, a satchel sewn into it to keep trail mix. but it's also going to be hooked up to a bungee as well.
Well, so you can keep your choristers on a bungee at all times? Because they will run away often.
They will run away. Because often they'll be like, oh, I'm 24 now. Oh, I want to get on with that. I thought this was just a phase. I want to get you first. In you come. Oh, that's why we got the bungee attached.
You're a chorister for life.
You're a chorister for life. Pacado, pacado, pacado. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not really even choral singing in the kind of classical sense, is it? It's more
it's a different kind.
Yeah.
And often when they're running away and I'm trying to reel them back, they'll be going, Pacadino! Pacadino! And they'll try and jump down a cavern or down a crevasse. They'll be like, oh!
It's an optical illusion, isn't it? Yeah, it's a crevasse. Yeah.
It's a complete optical illusion. Mm. It's actually a revasse. it puts them back where they started.
Before we started recording, Mike, you... I asked you how your day had gone yesterday because you were doing an acting job.
Yeah.
And you said you'd had a major setback.
Not in the acting job, but I had a personal health issue.
Oh.
Which feels very much in the realms of the provincial middle-aged man.
Oh, not the fabled omni-hemorrhoid.
It wasn't, no. thank goodness. I'm so pleased you brought that up. I had some definitive work done there.
Okay.
No, yep. This was.
So you're talking about the extension. You've been putting it off for ages.
The extension is stable. It's earthquake proof. It's the whole thing is rigged to withstand.
So what you've done is you've looked at your anus and you've thought I could knock this all through, and I could go open plan. And you're adding value, aren't you?
We actually found some old letters from the Second World War.
That's interesting, isn't it, when you get a find like that?
A lover that must have been hidden in the chimney by a mother or something. It's, yes, really amazing what you discover. And some original features.
Some original features.
Mm.
Well, you found an old Victorian's man hand, didn't you? Which had stayed pickled in your stomach brines, hadn't it?
That's right.
And you had a pelvic stud wall, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was actually opens up to a walk-in shoe rack.
Oh, that's a nice little touch.
Mm. Thank you.
Well, one does put these things off, doesn't one? But actually, when one does get round to it, one feels that one shouldn't have done it. One should have done it, one should have done it a long time ago, actually.
Correct. So that has often been my motto.
Yeah.
No, it was the other end of things. I woke up at about 5 o'clock in the morning, aware that there was a crunching sound and the sensation of something giving way inside my skull.
What? And,
how bad is this?
It was alarming. I've never woken up so quickly at that time of day. And
blimey.
I think it's probably not bad, but what had happened, and it was quite distressing, is the inside of one of my top front teeth had just like cracked off.
Oh. So which teeth are we talking about now?
This is a front incisor there. So the front, like the front.
The Hollywood teeth.
Mm.
The Hollywood teeth, yeah.
Yeah.
I've told you, Mike, don't watch documentaries about U-boats just before going to bed. Because were you grinding your teeth in a sort of, I don't know.
I mean, my first thought, as is the thought of any provincial middle-aged man, you know, when bits of you start to just come off, you assume you've been the victim of a radioactive poisoning.
Of course.
It was quite alarming.
So do you think Putin has got to you? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's sort of 5 o'clock in the morning, so there's no one to ask. I've got no dental expertise. And also, I've prided myself in the past, I've got quite healthy teeth. They're unattractive teeth.
You drink a lot of milk?
I do a lot of milk. I take my teeth swimming with me on a regular basis. Do you know what I mean? So I've never had, I didn't know, is this the beginning of something? Is this the end? What is it? I tried calling the dentist. Obviously, no one's there.
Also, you just can't just call a dentist.
Well, I called their landline and left a voicemail. I mean, I think a bit of me was hoping that they might sort of chopper themselves in from Exeter to Liverpool. And
you were in Liverpool, of course.
So
you
were in Liverpool.
Yeah, you weren't even at home.
No.
So hang on, did you call a dentist at 5 a.m.?
Yes, I left them a voicemail.
Wow.
Thinking I would get ahead of the queue when they worked out their appointments.
Is that like a no questions asked mafia dentist?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a mafia horse dentist, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a mafia horse dentist. Just for a quick explainer for listeners. Mm. So the teeth are they're sort of, well, they're a vestigial bone, isn't it, left over from when we were they're left over from when we were beaked. When we were beaked horse fish. No, but
living in the trees.
Teeth are entirely ceramic, aren't they? They're a mixture of sort of display, but they also have crucial functions, don't they? So the molars, was it a molar?
No, it was an incisor. It was right at the front.
So was it one of the kind of fang ones?
No, it was an incisor, one of the very front teeth.
One of the crown jewels.
If you were going to imagine the sort of collapse of something,
yeah,
sort of like an like a human unzipping, that would be a perfect point for it to start.
So, God, this sounds quite serious. How do they look now? I mean,
well, they look just as they did.
Can we see something? Can you show us? It hasn't.
Do you know what I mean? They're unattractive. They're quite bunched up.
They're not unattractive. The facial expression you pulled is unattractive. It's hard to bear your teeth in a friendly way, isn't it? It's literally one of the functions of baring your teeth is to terrify your opponent. That's why you do bare your teeth.
I mean, it's a bit like when people look at a chimp that's smiling and go, they're not meant to smile, actually.
No.
That's when they're very distressed.
They're going to pull your arms off any second.
Now, Mike, before we go any further,
yeah,
is this a cock and bull story you're telling us because you went to Liverpool to do a bit of work and you're you know, you're there on your own, your family at home in Exeter.
Yeah.
Maybe you cut loose a bit of an evening before your next day in Liverpool. Maybe you get into a street altercation with some toughs.
Yeah. Who crawl into the inside of my mouth and punch their way out, thus managing to loosen the inside of one of my teeth. I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't know it was possible for... It was so confusing.
I would have thought it's a big, solid thing. You can't...
Well, that's it. It was like a sheet. It was like the back sheet. I didn't know that was physically... I didn't know that could
I don't
happen.
Think that is physically possible, Mike.
Well, maybe it isn't. Maybe it'll turn out it's just a sort of old bit of cheese or something, and I'll be very relieved when I see the dentist tomorrow. I don't know.
So can everyone just slow down a bit, Mike?
Mm.
We live in an atomized society in terms of attention, right? We're in an attention economy.
Have I lost yours?
A lot
is that what you're telling me?
A lot of things are fighting for my attention right now. Yeah? We've got Instagram. I've got my iPad open here. Mm-hmm. I've got a mug with a picture of Theresa May on it.
Mm-hmm. and he got my gob.
There's a story behind that, by the way, but which I won't tell you now. So essentially, my interest is, it's a bit like on Netflix nowadays. Mm. I don't know if you know, if you realize this, but it's now tailored to the viewer. So on Netflix, for example, I'll be watching a drama now, and the dialogue will be something like, "Okay, so we need to attack the White House at dawn. Henry, come back. Henry, and then I'll go back to it, and I go, "Okay, so we're going to attack the White House at dawn." But they started putting that in.
Yeah,
there's a thing now, isn't it? Famously, where they characters are constantly saying whose name everyone is. They'll be like, "Brian, we're going to attack the White House at dawn. What time did you say, Steve?" "I said dawn, Brian."
Yeah, they recap what happened in the previous scene quite a lot. Yeah,
why are they doing that? It's in case you're watching it in.
Because you're not everyone, really watching.
Because I'm brushing my teeth, I'm having a shit, I'm investing in Bitcoin, I'm playing squash online with a 4-year-old in Korea. So much is going on. the Netflix has to constantly, everyone has to be constantly topping up the plot and reminding everyone, people what they're called and stuff. So essentially, Mike, your tooth story has just basically, it's been like a...
Unfollowable.
Oh, it's a pickled onion thrown into the Albert Hall.
Okay. In terms
of I feel like that would be noticed.
Well, it would be instantly pulverized by thousands of hidden lasers. Anyway, so Mike, what I'm saying is, can you just give us a quick so you've got my attention now.
Yes.
But can you, a quick top up of what actually happened? So you woke up very early in the morning. You felt, so what actually happened? Or what did you feel in your tooth and what actually happened?
I felt a crunching and a loosening.
Oh, my Lord.
That's what woke me up. And then I was aware that this hard bit of tooth had come.
Did it come off?
It was there loose in my gob.
Have you got it?
I do have it. I Googled it, and they said you should preserve it in saliva or milk in a container, which I didn't have, but I did have a spare dog poo bag in my cagoule, so I just spat into that and put in one of the old UHT milks for good measure.
Does it work with UHT milk?
Don't know. We'll see what the dentist makes of that tomorrow.
You made what's known as the dentist's trifle.
It's never a happy dish, is it?
I'm pretty sure, Mike, that when you turn up with a bag full of spit and UHT milk in your tooth, the dentist is just going to put it directly in the bin.
2 days old as well, let's not forget.
So the hope is that they can reattach this shard of tooth.
I don't think so. I'd be very surprised if that shard of tooth is still in good nick come tomorrow, because they weren't in a rush to see me either. Do you know what I mean? I assume that, I mean, they would literally drop everything. Get in the Chinook.
This is what we trained for, guys.
On the voicemail, did you say, "You must understand, I'm an actor, for God's sake. I'm an actor."
It's the lifeblood of this country. The creative industries, one of the few things we can still be proud of.
So I've got no idea.
Could it be an enamel issue?
Well, yes. Yes. But you don't know what that means. I think it could also just as equally, I think this is unlikely, but just be some sort of great big sheet of tartar. But I mean, that'd be great.
That'd be grotesque, though, Mike.
I'd be thrilled.
It'd be kind of heinous.
It'd be grotesque. Yeah, I'd be very surprised if that was the case. As I say, I look after the old Nashers.
What have you been eating the previous evening? Had you been, you know...
Car picnic,
right. Mm. So what's that, like half a pint of unleaded? Some antifreeze.
It was, well, just a sandwich I'd made for myself.
Yeah.
A little tea towel over the lap, an old tea towel over the lap, because on too many occasions have I dropped a little bit of chili sauce or chutney or cheese onto, it always lands on the groin of the trouser. Mm. But not too many times. Spicy cheese sandwich, apple. I'd made myself a little sort of vegetable sort of salad-y pot as well.
And just the usual 20 World War I ball bearings.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. To round it off.
Encased in rock solid toffee.
It's nothing to see here, basically. Yeah. No, you're right, it is a mystery.
Let's turn on the beam machine.
Let's do it.
Good idea.
topic, as sent in by Tom from Bristol.
Hello, Tom from Bristol.
Is extreme sports.
Oh, wow. He's come to the right place, hasn't he? Yeah, it is always electric guitars, isn't it, stuff with extreme sports? It's never a bright, sharp cornet, is it?
Today we're snowboarding.
Yeah, brass is all about, yeah, it's tournaments, isn't it? It's old nightly tournaments.
Yeah, so what counts as an extreme sport? So that's like base jumping?
Yes, and have they got more extreme? That's
wing suiting?
There might have been a time when maybe windsurfing was regarded as extreme.
Yes, whereas now that's something that your elderly aunt might do.
Yeah, and there's, I want to say water skating. That's not right.
Ice skating?
No, the...
water skating is that still is an extreme sport.
It's yeah, almost, the out of the back of a speedboat. Wakeboarding? What is it?
Wind...
No, attached to a rope at the back of a speedboat.
Water skiing?
Water skiing.
Water skiing. That's quite old school. That's quite 70s, is it?
It feels old-fashioned. I saw someone water skiing the other day, and I was like, oh, that feels like something from Baywatch or something.
I think the carbon footprint of that must be quite bad.
Yes.
Why?
We need a huge speedboat.
It's a roddy great speedboat. Just to pull along
just
one...
To power a 50-year-old accountant through...
Exactly.
Through
just to give
Tom
one
Bay.
50-year-old accountant the holiday of his dreams.
So what's the closest that any of us have done to an extreme sport?
I have done that. I have
wood skiing.
Yeah, although it was called wakeboarding at the time. Which yeah. There was just one... It was like the snowboard equivalent. I was not successful.
In your head, while you were doing wakeboarding, Mike,
yeah.
Which also, without wanting to be rude, people trying and not pulling off water skiing and wakeboarding looks like the lamest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Because if you pull it off, it's like the coolest thing in the world. It's like, bow, bow! Yeah, whoa, hang ten, whoa, let's get some air. Yeah. And then if it's just someone sort of like struggling behind a boat.
Wakeboarding is even worse for that because it's a single board and you're kind of sideways on. At least I think with water skiing, I've seen this people who are really bad. Like the boat can go fast enough that you can briefly be on the surface of the water, even if you're in no control at all.
Right.
Whereas the wakeboard is such, you're sitting on a massive plank, basically, slightly sideways on. So unless you catch it perfectly, I mean, you're going straight back. You're going face flat into the water, hard. You're not even getting started. It's a pathetic spectacle.
And the water, people forget this. Water is the liquidity of water is a purely relative phenomenon. Depending on how you hit it and what angle and what velocity, it's essentially like hitting a concrete car park, isn't it? You're basically plunging headfirst into a concrete car park on one of those things, aren't you? Because the surface of the water has a meniscus.
Yeah, I was multi-storying, basically.
Yeah, you were multi-storying.
And I never got further than that.
You were totally NCP'd, weren't you?
Exactly.
That's how they describe it. So hang on, so wakeboarding, is that like water skiing, but it's one ski, so it's like...
Like the snowboarding, what snowboarding snow, is to skiing.
What snowboarding is to skiing.
So
you were wakeboarding. You must look like a real tosser, I imagine.
Correct, yes. Yeah.
Even if it was going well, I'd clock you as a tosser
There's no way to hide in terms of tosser optics. You're going to look like a tosser either way. It's just different sorts of tosser.
Yeah. And that's before we've even thrown the moustache in the mix, isn't it? On top of that, as a real rancid cherry on the on top of the turd pie. So and, do you clip your feet, your legs, do you clip your feet in?
Were they clipped in? I don't know if they were clipped. They might have been under little hoops.
Little hoops, yeah.
Or were they clipped? I don't remember. I didn't think they were clipped.
Mm.
Were they clipping too? Do you know what I mean? I don't remember wearing a special boot or anything like that.
Because really the only way would be to sear you on using sort of meat tongs, like hot meat tongs, would be to sear you onto the board. That's the only way to sort of join flesh onto something.
Yeah, to seal in the flavours.
to seal in the flavours.
But yeah, I don't know if that's even a thing. Because there's your faddy extreme sport. There's your extreme sport where... There's something that isn't extreme that someone makes extreme, right?
How do you mean?
Playing ping pong on the edge of a volcano.
Correct.
Yeah.
Or even just like your bicycle. People have a bicycle. Maybe they go a bit of mountain biking. So they're just they're in a forest somewhere on the bottom of a mountain. And then there's people who like take that and go, I'm going to mountain bike, but in a favela with a GoPro.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So anything can be taken to its extreme.
It's about the odds, isn't it? It's about pitching the odds against yourself in a way to make it extreme. For example, one extreme sport I like to do in London is actually going out on the streets and actually trying to find an actual policeman actually out on the streets.
Ladies and gentlemen, please pray silence for a moment of satire.
Jonathan Swift.
Holding institutions to account.
Mark Twain.
Speaking truth to power.
Chaucer.
A core part of any healthy democracy.
Chumbawamba.
Can our jokes actually change government policy? Of course they can.
Quiet, please respect this important mode of humour.
So the beach has a lot of extreme sports options that are presented to you as a way of wrestling with the fact that you're essentially what hits you right up in your grill on holiday is that your life is meaningless, is big time meaningless, because you've been looking forward to this for ages, and it's just some really, really hot sand and like loads of water. It's like, do you know what I mean? Well,
the prawns, it's nothing. The prawns last night weren't even that nice, were they?
The prawns, you could get
they were like Wagamama standard.
They were just, yeah, you could get that delivered on Thursday and not have to get out of bed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also things like the water is actually, basically, you know, I've done loads of beach holidays in my life. You look at the brochure, or these days an email.
Ouch. Take that, holiday industry and tech in general.
And it's got a photo of that perfect beach.
Yeah.
And whenever you arrive at that perfect beach, the sea, I didn't think I've ever in my life, and I've been on entire beach holidays where no one can even mention this to each other, because it's like, we all talked about how great the beach and the sea was going to be. We'd all got the email and we get to the beach and the sea and we all have to say it's all perfect. But actually the sea is just full of this like horrible dark kelp. and covered in a thick film of some kind of scum.
Where are you going?
Henry, you made the mistake of returning year after year to Shetland.
And I've been faithful to my Shetland holiday every year, and it's still there. To be honest, I reckon Shetland, you might actually get better seas and less scum and stuff, but it's just freezing cold.
Yeah.
Like, there's always scum in the water, thick kelp everywhere, and loads of rocks that will, like, ruin your feet.
Yeah.
But no one, I've been on entire holidays where no one even mentioned it, because it's like, that would really put right up in our grills the meaninglessness of the rest of our lives, because we've been looking forward to this all fucking year.
So do you think that's why there's a series of extreme sports distractions?
Correct.
At the beach, that's mostly, they are getting more inventive. It's sort of, it's a thing on a rope, isn't it? Basically, powered by a speedboat. And maybe it'll take you up in the air. Maybe it'll be an inflatable thing. Fall off and give yourself a life-changing injury when you come into contact with the water.
So I went to Corfu this year on holiday, which was my first beach holiday in like over a decade.
Mm.
And there was a kid doing a thing where it's like a jetpack, but on his feet. And he was flying.
Oh, wow.
Do you know this?
Oh, yeah. Is this, I've seen videos. Was it water powered?
Water is sucked out of the sea and then comes out of his feet and then he goes up in the air. It was mad.
It's sort of like Navy SEAL kind of. That feels like that's kind of military tech, doesn't it?
Yes.
It feels like if you need to go and like rescue a prisoner off an enemy battleship or something. Yeah. But also have a good time while you're at it. There's no reason why you shouldn't have fun at work.
Yeah, so that's extreme, isn't it? Is that an extreme sport? Maybe that's enough for an extreme sport. Or do you need to get someone else doing it and you put a bit of beach ball into it, or a bit of fencing or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Or a gun.
Yeah.
Well, I think set that boy up on his jetpack sandals flying around the ocean. Give me a
crossbow.
And we've got ourselves a 5-star deluxe holiday experience.
A spectator sport, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably just some Dutch billionaire's son.
There was quite a lot of hatred, I think, radiating off the beach towards this teenager.
It sounds noisy.
It was noisy. It was annoying. It was clearly very expensive. I think, even without knowing, I think everyone was sat there going, I bet that's costing 200 euros.
Yeah, it's like 500 euros for 5 minutes. Kind of.
Yeah.
The other thing which goes into that category is jet ski.
Oh, God.
You might as well have a Tannoy Jeffrey Archer's voice saying, "I'm a dickhead," coming out of it on repeat, attached to your head.
It's true.
Parachuting, that is something which is, that's something which is now quite available, isn't it? You can just, yeah. I could be, okay, I put it to you, I could be parachuting in 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we could actually stream the pot. That'd be quite good.
Yeah.
Now I could be parachuting. So I could probably parachute
today.
You're
in central London, so I mean, you would be intercepted by the RAF and the police, and you'd be destroyed midair.
I'd be brûléed midair.
You would, yes.
Yeah.
And cremed on arrival to the ground.
Yeah.
Yes. I think parachuting, that's something I very much wanted to do as a young man. I now have no desire to try it at all. None. It's gone.
Yeah.
And same goes with bungee. Would I bungee?
Bungee I did as a young man, and I think a small group of us, we sort of peer pressured each other into doing it. Before us, it was in New Zealand, and it's sort of very, very high one from a sort of cable car over a canyon of some sort. I don't think any of us really wanted to do it. Matt, my friend who you've met, the ultra quizzer.
Yeah.
He, I think, was having second thoughts, and he was at the end of this little sort of platform, little gantry, and he was lashed up. He had his harness on and the bungee cord attached. And
when you say lashed up, do you mean
completely rat-assed? It was Mike and some medical lads in New Zealand. Am I right?
He would have been sober, but he was tied and tethered, and I think he was having second thoughts. But he's not. He's capable of moments of clumsiness, as my good friend Matt, and he basically tripped up over his own legs and fell off the cable car. And thank God he was already attached to the cord. Otherwise, this would be a very different story. But you can see the video of it. He's basically falling the wrong way around. It's clearly a man who's tripped up and fallen in slow motion.
Oh my God.
You know, he hasn't dived. You know, I think we all were hoping to do like a GoldenEye Pierce Brosnan type kind of off the dam sort of thing. That's what
we come up and you're shagging someone.
Exactly. And you get an MBE. Yeah. But I think he really got quite nastily whiplashed on the way down because he was completely the wrong way around on descent.
You meant to go head first, basically.
Yes, ideally. Yeah. And then you sort of slowly, you know, your descent is slowed and that become, whereas he was like, he was sort of feet at the bottom, head up, but a bit sort of slightly sort of tangled up and sideways on a slightly oblique angle. And when it flipped him back up, it just whipped him round. And he would have given him a real, he would have been shaken, not stirred, for sure, by that experience.
Very good.
Thank you.
So if I understand physics correctly,
which you don't. Go on.
Eventually, if you go down, what comes up must go down. Depending on which way around you're looking at it.
Okay, but this is the other way around.
But eventually, the force would kind of mean you'd end up dangling halfway down a New Zealand gorge. And at that point, what, do you have to climb up the rope? Are you on your own? Or
what do you mean? It was an elastic. It's a big elasticated cord.
Yeah, but you'd bounce, 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 and eventually you'd settle.
Yeah.
Sort of halfway down the gorge, just hanging on a string. So how do they get you out of that position?
Well, they wind you back up again.
Oh, they wind you back
like
up?
Like a hose pipe.
Yeah. Like a hose pipe?
Yeah. It's all dangly, jingly hose pipe.
I never knew that.
It's either that or lower you down and drop you, but if they'd done that that to us, we'd have ended up in some rapids, I think.
I can imagine the bit where you're being slowly winched back up to be quite nice.
That was nice, because it's all over and it's done and, you know, this ridiculous decision, needless decision to swing it about, prove something is, it's over and you can enjoy this. You can at that point enjoy this view and this strange sensation.
And all the blood going to your head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It goes on a bit too long, I think.
One of the reasons I wouldn't like to do bungeeing is my fear of harnesses and my distrust of harnesses, buckles and anything where you have to thread some, what do you call it? What's a flat rope? What do you call that stuff?
Or a belt or something.
A strap?
Yeah, we have to thread a strap through something, background, upround. Because I've always got the sense that if you do it wrong, it'll just open up completely. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, it feels like there's a sort of trust involved in harnesses that I don't like. I'm not
comfortable around harnesses. No, you're not. Yeah, that's not your comfort zone, is it?
It's not my comfort zone.
When this podcast fails, crashes and burns, and we're all seeking different forms of employment, who knows what that'll be. But should any of you listeners end up at the top of a crane and see that the Strapmeister is the former podcaster Henry Packer, you get the hell out of there. Yeah. Okay.
I'll be very jaded. I'll be heavily smoking, I imagine. I've gone back on the fags.
No one end of a strap from t'other. Time.
And if the jump has already begun and you've just noticed it's Henry, but you have left the platform, you want to start getting health insurance as you fall. If you can, just get your phone out. Just before you hit the
hopefully by then we'll be on 8G or something, so you should be able to do it quite quickly.
My advice, actually, put your phone away and just enjoy the last 45 seconds of your life, because they will involve your head being plunged into a massive tiramisu. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to flood that New Zealand valley with tiramisu, and it's called extreme tiramisuing.
The overheads of your business venture are going to be enormous.
The overheads will be huge. Yeah. But your head, you plunge down into the tiramisu, right the way down to the sort of liqueur biscuit layer.
Well, that's the thing, is which layer do you get to? That's what you can talk about with your friends afterwards, isn't it? That's the
exactly
idea.
But ideally, if you time it right, the next one...
Do you
one...
hit the bottom of the massive glass ramekin? You know, that's...
yeah. Because you'll know about it. Believe you, me. The early test we tried it with creme brulee initially. And
I can crack through that layer.
You can't put the hardest layer on
you
top.
You can't put the hard... You can't, it turns out. You can with creme brulees, but not in a bungee context. So tartatins were actually quite successful.
Yeah, or a cottage pie.
Or a nice cottage, ooh, nice lovely. Hot, a nice hot, hot, hot cottage pie. Imagine plunging into that from 3,000 feet through the soft potato. Oh, lovely soft potato, and into the boiling hot mince. Yeah,
I've been snagged on a bit of carrot. I'm not going back up.
No, if you then bounce up to the top again, I then shove a bouquet garni in your mouth, slap it in the chops, and down you go again.
Yeah, and onlookers can throw side salads at you, can't they?
Side salads up, and then second bounce up, I hose pipe you with hot Worcester sauce. And there you go again.
It's a red letter day, isn't it? And it's one to remember.
I did a thing once called gorge walking.
Oh yeah,
was that when? Is that when you walk down the road looking bloody gorgeous?
Yeah, you're doing that just this morning, weren't you, Ben?
Oh, absolutely. And they've lined up a load of Outward Bound instructors to go, oh, look at you.
Ooh. Ooh. Or if you pay for the presidential package, the most expensive one, it's, oh, blimey, wouldn't mind a bit of that. Yeah. That's really expensive.
It's a real tonic. No, it's kind of like going down a river kind of on your bum, basically.
It's sort of nature's obstacle course, isn't it?
Yeah. We got on a... Do you remember when there was loads of vouchers around? Was it called... what was that thing where for a few years everyone was buying vouchers? Groupon?
Oh, Groupon, that's right. Yeah, what happened to Groupon?
So we got a Groupon to do this gorge walking thing, and basically it turned out it was the first day of the season, so it was a bit too early in the year to do it. Basically what we realised as soon as we got there is you're meant to do it in the summer because then you don't get horribly freezing and, you know...
Where were you doing this?
This is in Wales somewhere.
Yeah.
And we got a phone call on the way and he was saying, oh, it's been raining a lot and there's a chance that the river level will be too high for you to do it. Oh. But it's looking okay, but just so you know, you might get here, we might have to call it off. We were like, okay. We got there, he said, right, it's right on the limit, but we'll be fine.
Yeah.
And basically there was a bit too much water going down this thing, and there was a bit where you had to go over a massive rock on your bum and then sort of go down a big steep kind of
Ben, slime. Can I say, you've just been conned. Someone has taken money off you, just chucked you into a river. I mean, what you're describing isn't an organised sport. It's something that would normally happen during a tsunami or something. You're in big, you're in deep shit. You're flying down a river. I mean, what's the sport element? You get tossed hither and thither.
Basically, yes. Ping-ponged off a series of rocks.
Anyway, there was a bit where the guy went, right, this is the bit here where if there's a bit too much water, it can be a bit dangerous, which is when you go over this big rock and go down a big
and so
fall.
What and therefore what so what do you do
just so he said I'll go down
fingers
first.
Crossed
I'll okay. go down first if it's too much for you because I'll be fine but if it's going to be too much for you I'll let you know and then you don't have to do this but you can get out of the river and we'll walk around it okay
mm-hmm.
And the problem was that there's too much water so you go over the side of a waterfall and then there's so much water going down on top of you get forced to the bottom of the river and can't get up again because there's too much water coming down on top of you right. So that was the danger.
And also the other danger is you get sucked in by the kind of water nymphs, isn't it, of drowning.
That's right. Come to us. Come. Oh, Benjamin. Oh, you look really lovely today.
You perfectly judge your shorts length. A little bit of knee, but not too much. No, no, no.
If you start listening to those voices, the water nymphs have you.
It's true.
You and you will drown. So you've got to be careful. Yeah.
So he said, I'll go over, and then when I get over, I can tell you if it's okay or not. Mm. Anyway, he went over. The problem was it was so loud that I couldn't understand a word he was saying. So he went through, came out the other side, kind of sat on a little rock and started shouting at us.
Yeah, preset hand signal would have been handy here.
Couldn't hear a thing.
No.
So I just thought, he seems enthusiastic.
You've been so conned by this guy. This guy is not a, like, you know, a signed up, certified extreme sports maestro. He's just he's a bloke who lives near a river and needs like 20 quid.
So I went over.
What a sight for him as well. Having screamed warnings, don't do it, then it's the man who... No, you, I can see from here, you're not strong enough to pick up aggression without both hands. Don't, whatever you do.
Well, he's hoping for a quick kill on Ben. That's his best case scenario for him. He can deny the whole thing, but what he doesn't want is an injured, litigious Ben.
He's like, I hope those nymphs are getting involved. So I went over. It was pretty awful. He had to drag me out. Oh. And then he said, what are you doing, you idiot? I told you not to come over. And I said, I didn't hear you. You look so enthusiastic. But he was enthusiastic. He was enthusiastic. He's telling me, whatever you do, do not do that.
Well, it's hard to the body language, isn't it? And the signals.
Yes.
That could be better. Yeah, come on, let's have a good time. This is extreme sports. I'm finally living. stop it. You're going to die. Yeah.
He's swishing his hand back and forth across his throat. What does he mean? What can he possibly mean?
Yes, I know what you mean. I do want to sing in a full-throaty way about how good I'm feeling. Yeah. That sounds like that's non-regulated. That wasn't really very legit. What was it, cash in hand? What was the deal?
He had a Land Rover.
I take all of that back. So, and I really, really apologise to that gentleman and his family and his business associates. Just sometimes you get things wrong. You make a call, you get it wrong. It happens. I'm holding my hands up and I'm sorry.
All right, time to read your emails.
Yes, please.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your health.
My beautiful horse.
This one is from Andy from Kenilworth.
Oh,
and
Andy from Kenilworth.
Makes reference to an email we read out about somebody being on a pride march and being helped out by a provincial dad who knew what semaphore was. Do you remember this?
I do, yeah.
They were having a conversation, they couldn't think of the word, and then a helpful provincial middle-aged man turned around and told them what the word was. We also talked about whether, because I thought that there's a chance that guy's also a bit of a knob.
Yeah, but he had my full support.
Yeah, I didn't want to be negative. I was just, I think there are two sides to that coin is what I was saying, I guess.
As is so often the case with coins.
And Andy from Kenilworth has picked up the other side of the coin. Okay. Has this to say. On a trip to Woodbridge in Suffolk with friends, we came across a huge workshop where a group of leathery old men were painstakingly constructing an entire Saxon longship using only historically accurate methods.
Brilliant.
Great. As part of this, there was a room where you could try on replica Saxon helmets. And of course, as men in our 30s, we charged straight for this section.
Yeah.
One helmet slipped so far down my friend Sam's face that he couldn't see, and I jokingly said, I don't think you're in any danger of getting shot in the eye there, Harold.
Okay, yeah.
This was, of course, a very, very funny joke about the Battle of Hastings.
Very good, yes. Mm. A bit too soon, perhaps, for some, but...
sometimes you're so close to the epicentre of a funny joke that it passes through you and you don't actually laugh, which is what happened to me with that one, because I was almost so close to it. It just reverberated through my body.
This was, of course, a very, very funny joke about the Battle of Hastings. But as soon as I'd said it, a provincial dad appeared. as if from the shadows, and scoffed loudly. "I think you're thinking of the Normans." And then, like smoke dissipating, he was gone. And I was left to seethe for the next several months that I'd been incorrectly corrected on my excellent joke. I'm so angry. Best wishes, Andy of Kenilworth.
Yes, he was incorrectly corrected, wasn't he?
Harold would have been an Anglo-Saxon, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he was Saxon. So I think Andy's saying Andy's joke was bang on, which it was, a perfect, perfect joke.
That provincial middle-aged dad who appeared from the shadows may have been an imposter, because he's got that wrong, hasn't he?
I'm a bit worried about that middle-aged dad, because he would have realised at some point, you know, if he'd been overheard by any of his brethren, they'd have torn him to pieces, and I think Andy would have seen that. But he would have had that realisation probably on the way home.
Mm.
And he'll be sick to his stomach. Yeah. Sick.
And rightly so.
Yeah.
If you witness someone just doing handbrake turns in a Hyundai all night
yeah,
in an Asda car park... It could well have been that man.
If you're going to pompously correct someone, you've got to be sure you're right, you know.
Emily emails.
Emily, hello.
Dear Beans, although Henry struggled to understand the visual link between Ben's sideburns and duffel coat.
That's true. I saw them as referencing different current cultural sort of heritages from each other.
Well, she writes, I recognised it immediately and felt it deep in my soul.
Ah.
In fact, as soon as it was asked what shoes he would be wearing, I shouted, "Converse, you fools!"
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Here is the key for unlocking this look. Pseudo-intellectual indie music soft boy.
Nice.
Very good.
I mean, that's a bullseye, isn't it?
Very good.
And how do I know this? Being only a few years younger than Ben, I was myself a pseudo-intellectual indie music soft gal. For Henry's benefit, allow me to paint a more complete picture.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
It's 2004. As well as sideburns, a duffel coat and Converse, he's also sporting a T-shirt from an obscure band and a cardigan he stole from a grandparent.
Mm-hmm.
He raises his hand to adjust his ironically large spectacles and reveals a wrist full of Reading Festival wristbands of increasing crustiness. He's listening to Franz Ferdinand on his MP3 player, but will claim to only have liked them before they were cool. In his satchel is last week's copy of The Guardian, an unread copy of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and a hip flask. One day soon, he will try smoking weed and be deeply rubbish at it. I personally wore my duffel coat, two big jeans, Converse and satchel until they quite literally fell to pieces, but sadly didn't have the sideburns as a teenage girl. Now I'm in my 30s, they're coming in quite nicely, so there's hope for me yet. Beaniest wishes, Emily from Gravesend.
Thank you, Emily. Brilliant. It's a perfect portrait.
Can I say, that's absolutely superb. That's a brilliant snapshot of that moment.
Yeah.
Can I add something to it, which is, you're walking around, you've got a Franz Ferdinand CD in... A bag from FOP.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you remember FOP?
FOP Records is a good reference, yeah.
I feel like I'm just ready to remember FOP. Or have people been remembering FOP for a while?
Doesn't it still exist? Is a FOP.
The FOP marketing people are hating this moment. I'm sorry, FOP.
I think FOP were bought by HMV.
Really?
So it's no longer actually FOP. But there are FOPs around. Or there is at least one FOP.
So I quite often get confused as to what the North, you know, my awareness of what different decades mean. Mm. You know, I've got a strong sense of 70s, 80s, 90s. Noughts, I start to get mixed up. What is noughts? That's helped me sort of focus down on it. Zero in a bit on it.
Noughts for you, Henry, I think is also difficult because that would have been a phase where your nearest and dearest would have been really anxious that, you know. At some point, surely Henry's going to get on with it, something, isn't he? Yeah. So it might be a bit of a lost decade.
It was quite a lost decade.
Yeah.
Well, I was experimenting with open bin policies in my Barons Court laboratory. I was trying to come up with a bold new future.
Yeah. What it is to be.
Yeah.
In the noughties. Yeah.
I was watching The Sopranos a lot.
The Sopranos are responsible for a lot of people losing the noughties.
Yeah. Franz Ferdinand, though, are we ready to say that they were completely shit? Are we ready to hear that? I went to see them live.
Did you?
But what was that posturing nonsense all about?
I didn't. And I'm aware they're huge and were well loved. I didn't jump on that bandwagon. I have to say that wasn't they weren't my cup of tea.
But I remember I went to see Franz Ferdinand gig at Brixton Academy, and halfway through I ended up going and I think playing a Triple Pursuit arcade game in the bar for the majority of the gig.
Well, you'd have been living in Glasgow at the time of the Franz Ferdinand.
Yes.
Boom.
Yeah. Well, because Glasgow and Scotland were quite hot at that point.
Because Belle and Sebastian were a bit cool at that
time. So Belle and Sebastian, that's the only band I've ever been a mega fan of.
Right.
You got me onto Belle and Sebastian.
Yeah, I loved Belle and Sebastian. I was a mega fan. In fact, I'm going to see them in Paris.
Are you really?
Yeah, in February next year. Yeah, there was a whole sort of twee pop. Is it twee? That was quite soft boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the thing is, I couldn't pull off soft boy because I just had too much dark charisma. Do you know what I mean?
He's laced with danger.
Laced with danger.
Yeah, your personality sort of musically suggested industrial metal.
It was very much Berlin.
Yeah.
An old vacant warehouse, a huge vacant warehouse with a dead crow in the middle of it. You pick up the dead crow.
There's a huge speaker inside it playing electronic dance music.
There's a speaker inside it. Yeah, playing electronic dance music. Very cool. That was a great email.
Yeah, thanks, Emily.
I do like those. I like that, the science of different types. What is that?
Yes. And it's always uncomfortable to realise that you were and are just a type, basically. Mm.
So what are kind of some other ones?
Current ones of that era?
Or from now or then or any time?
You sort of need to look back on them, I think, rather than knowing them.
Tory mod. There's always like, there's ones where you're like, what is that? How is that possible? Obviously, goth was a famous one, which still exists.
Yeah. That's had legs, hasn't it?
Then you got your cyber goth. Actually, when I was in Edinburgh recently, I was walking along through the park, and suddenly there was this. I was just in amongst this huge teenage gathering of like cyber mega goths.
Mm-hmm. What is a cyber goth?
I don't really know. I may have made that name, but it just sort of felt it was all quite steampunk, mad hair, just incredible. Okay. It involved a lot of commitment.
Goggles on a top hat.
My dark green flat-fronted chinos got a little bit of respect off them. I think there was a slight doffing of the caps. Yeah.
Did they doff their begoggled?
They doffed their begoggled metal berets.
Thanks for everyone who signed up on the Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Patreon.com/3beansalad. Bonus eps galore. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where you were last night, Mike.
It certainly was.
Well, it was an intense one, wasn't it? Because it was the weaving of the great tea towel hot air balloon.
it was. Thank you, Henry. And here's my report.
It was the weaving of the great tea towel hot air balloon last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. The balloon was to be crewed by Amy Eckler, Julie Heyman, Catherine Smithard, and David Tick, with the intention of, once and for all, establishing the highest altitude at which Sean Bean can be distinguished from a wax likeness of Sean Bean by the naked eye. Dave Bond and William Taylor kindly donated their collection of Disney princess tea towels. Patrick LaHaye, Old Pedders, and Catherine donated their collection of tea towels adorned with words that are deemed rude in East Anglia but polite in Dorset. And Matt Corner, Pete Kellers, and Emily handed in the Baywatch tea towels at they have been trying and failing to get the backing of David Hasselhoff for 17 years. Suzanne Frodsham, Nick Turner, David Lockhart and Luke Morgan were appointed by Sean Bean as tea towel bailiffs with the right to enter private homes within a 40-mile radius of the lounge and confiscate any tea towel deemed to have aeronautical potential. As they roamed and pillaged, Richard Fuller, Rani, Zia Prazid 1 and Miles got to work weaving the available tea towels. Regrettably, their weaving speed exceeded the available tea towel substrate by an order of magnitude, and within minutes they had also unintentionally woven the trousers of Sam Williams, the blazer of Jack L, the espadrilles of Andy C and the scabbard of Hope K into the balloon. Joseph Mandaba attempted to free the stricken bean loungers, but was mistaken by Thomas Johansson and Sean McClarty for a saboteur and set upon. Keen only to damage the apparent ne'er-do-well and not the balloon, Thomas and Sean threw the bluntest thing they could find, which was Will Pearson, who took exception to this and declared himself the victim of a slander upon his character. An emergency tribunal was established, chaired by Ava Lynch, who felt the only fair way to make a decision was trial by combat. Stephen Hinton was invited to choose the weapons and selected orange juice. This may have been a mistake. The melee that followed led to such a soakening and stickification of the balloon that Ali Oops, Gavin Crosby and Bob also became adhered to it. By now it was clear that the amount of fuel needed to dry and launch the balloon would be immense, and so Keelan McRoberts, Tony Mackay and Kelly Elizabeth fracked as far as the eye could see until they struck gas. They needn't have bothered. After a recent dietary experiment involving the ingestion of only uncooked lentils, pulses and carpet, Owen Baker was on hand to supply all flammables needed. He was tapped by Dan H., lit by Charlie Maynard, and we have to assume the project would have been a success had not Rebecca ill-advisedly been using the balloon gondola to store Sean Bean's collection of antique Napoleonic gunpowder. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the show. We'll finish off with the version of our theme tune made by one of you. And this is from Sheldon from Melbourne.
Hello, Sheldon from Melbourne.
Hi, Sheldon from Melbourne.
He writes, "Hello, Beans. I'm a little late submitting a doo-wop version of the Three Beans Salad theme tune, inspired by your episode on the 60s some weeks ago.
Yeah.
Like Henry, I aspire to be a one-man doo-wop group. But also like Henry, I'm not a great singer." Oh.
Which Henry is he talking about?
"I don't have a clear idea of what doo-wop really is." So,
same again. Which Henry Miller? That's a dead novelist. Can't be that Henry. Who else is it? Henry
Kissinger.
Kissinger
at that time.
Yeah. Or as Rory Strutt calls him, Henry Kissinger.
Yeah,
he's always got to say everything in the wrong way.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, that's mad.
Come on, mate.
Come on. I'll let him say Asia and in an Indonesia.
Asia.
But that's pushing it too far.
I'd love to hear him ordering a Big Mac. "Can I have a big." A big Nick with extra.
Going to be a full Inspector Clouseau.
With extra Freyers.
He's gone quite middle English though.
Yeah.
Extra Freyers.
And a barbecue sauce. A small sachet of barbecue sauce.
Hint the knock it off the rooster.
You're really good, Mike, at just slipping into Middle English. You're quite good at it.
I dream in it.
So Sheldon writes, "So I'm not a great singer. I don't really have a clear idea of what doo-wop is. So this is my guess. Recorded using the jazz scat setting on a Roland RD700 GX keyboard."
It's a reliable bit of kit.
There we go. All right. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Thanks
Bye.
For listening. Cheerio.
Thanks very much. Bye. Ba-da-da-da.
I really like that. That sounds like a theme tune to like an 80s American TV show that would have been watched by 450 million people.
I was going to say, it sounds like the theme tune of a kind of Call My Bluff style British daytime TV program from the 90s.
Yeah.
With Bob Holness.
You know, wait, the vibes I got was, I'm strapped to a metal table. And I've got like the greatest, like what considered to be the one true genius of torture is about to walk into the room, and that's the music he plays.
So well done, Sheldon. You've got very different. We've all heard very different things. That's compositionally a triumph, I'd say. Thank you. Well done.
Do you remember when the story goes about Bohemian Rhapsody, that when it was first sent to Radio 1, was it Kenny Everett? I think played it twice in a row because he liked it so much.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Not again, man! Oh, no, I've got to get out of here.
That's right, Henry. There are 8 circular saws.
And now, the termites.
His own family call him Ivan the Bastard.